The lesson I read a few minutes ago from the Gospel of Mark is a passage known as Peter's Confession. And I would hazard a guess that if you've been a part of the church for a long time, especially if you've been a part of the church all your life, but this is a story that you've heard many, many, many times. And I would hazard another guess, and that is that if you've heard this story many, many times, the version of the story that you're used to hearing, the version of the story that's imprinted on your memory, is the one from the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew's version of Peter's confession is so imprinted on the church's consciousness that when we hear the Gospel of Mark, we tend to hear it according to Matthew's terms. And if there are gaps in Mark, which was written 20 years earlier, we fill in those gaps with what we remember from Matthew. But really, they tell quite different versions of the same story. And what I'd like to do today is to look at Mark's particular way of telling us the story of Peter's confession and considering what is Mark's meaning for us and what might this mean for our spiritual journeys. So let me begin by just telling the story up until the point where Matthew and Mark diverge. Jesus and the disciples were in Bethsaida, and they leave Bethsaida, and they head on the road to Caesarea Philippi, which is a village beyond the northern border of Israel, outside of Galilee. And as they're heading north upon the road, they're talking together, and in the course of their conversation, Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do people say that I am? What's the buzz?" And this is a pretty simple question to answer. Jesus isn't putting them on the spot. He's just asking for information. And they share some of the different things they've heard people speculating about Jesus. Some say he's John the Baptist. Some say he's Elijah, an ancient prophet who is supposed to come back to herald the appearance of the Messiah. And some think Jesus is a prophet whom God has appointed. And the conversation goes on talking about what people think Jesus is. But as they continue to walk up the road, Jesus stops. And he turns around and he looks at them. He looks them in the eye and he asks them a very different kind of question. "But what about you? What about you? Who do you say that I am?" And I would like to ask you to imagine the silence that I think must have fallen upon that group of disciples. The chattering suddenly stopped, because this was a question that made them very vulnerable. Nobody wanted to speak up. Nobody wanted to make themselves look like a fool by saying the wrong thing. It's kind of like being at an auction and sitting on your hands. A silence settled upon that group of disciples so thick you could cut it with a knife. And then finally, Peter breaks the silence. Peter gives voice to the intuition he has been harboring. And he says, "You're the Messiah." And at this point, the two stories diverge, Matthew's Gospel and Mark's Gospel. To continue down Matthew's path, because that's the version I think you already know, Jesus says, "You are the Messiah," and he goes on to add, "the Son of the living God." And Jesus' response to Peter leaves no doubt in anyone's mind that Peter has gotten it absolutely right. "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven." In other words, Peter hasn't doped this out. by his own human reason. Peter can say this only because God has revealed it to Peter. Peter is the recipient of divine revelation in Matthew's story. And then Jesus goes on. He says, "You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church," playing on the pun of the words in the Greek. You are Peter, Petros, and upon this rock, Petra, I will build my church. Peter is instituted as the leader of the early church, and the church has promised great things. The gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. And then Jesus goes on to give Peter remarkable authority within the church. He says, "I give you the keys of the kingdom, and what you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." In other words, what you say goes. What you say is allowed is allowed. What you say is prohibited is prohibited. And so Peter is given a lot of authority. And of course, this is the passage that has become the biblical basis for the institution of the papacy in the Roman Catholic Church. But the Gospel of Mark tells the same story in a very different way. I wonder if you noticed when I read it. Jesus asks, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter breaks the silence and says, "You're the Messiah." And the only response that Jesus makes in Mark is to turn to the disciples and sternly order them not to say anything to anyone about him. What kind of a response is this? And it actually gets even more interesting as you look at the Greek. The Greek word epitomao, that is translated sternly ordered, literally means rebuked. It's the same word that's used elsewhere in Mark for rebuked. Jesus rebukes them into silence. And what's interesting, if you remember the early part of the Gospel of Mark, when Jesus is in Galilee preaching in the synagogues and casting out demons, occasionally the demons will recognize who he is. They'll say, "I know who you are, the Holy One of God." And it says Jesus rebuked the demons to silence. And now Peter says, "You're the Messiah." And Jesus rebukes Peter to silence. What's this all about? And then Jesus goes on and begins to talk about, for the first time, what his mission as Messiah is going to look like. He says, "The Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the chief priests and the elders and the scribes and be killed and 3 days later rise." And Peter is horrified and he takes Jesus aside and Peter rebukes Jesus. And Jesus then turns to the disciples and rebukes Peter. And he says, "Get behind me, Satan. For your mind is not on divine things. Your mind is on human things." Both Matthew and Mark are telling us the story of Peter's confession. But it seems to me that you could hardly tell the same story in two different ways if you tried to. In Matthew, Jesus calls Peter the rock. In Mark, Jesus calls Peter Satan. In Matthew, Jesus makes it clear that the truth has been revealed to Peter by the Father in heaven. But in Mark, Jesus says that Peter's mind is not on heavenly things, but on earthly things, human things. In Matthew, the truth of Peter's confession is unambiguously affirmed. While in Mark, Peter's confession receives the same response as the demons have received. In Matthew, Peter is portrayed as the authoritative leader of the church to whom has been entrusted the truth of orthodoxy. While in Mark, Peter is portrayed as a very human, very fallible leader who may have the right words to say, but who doesn't always understand what they mean. And I just wonder at how such theological diversity, how such difference of understanding, how two so different sermons could have been preached on this same story by writers in the New Testament. But maybe it's not so much of a mystery after all. I mean, if we look at the church today, there is untold theological diversity around the world. And even within the United Methodist Church, there's an incredible amount of theological diversity. And people in the 21st century are not much different from people in the first century. I don't find it surprising, really, that Matthew and Mark should have had such theological diversity between them. But I think we can understand the differences of opinion that crept up in just 20 years from our own experience of life. I know when I think back 20 years, how different things were then. I suspect when you look back 20, 40, 50 years, how your perspective on life has changed and grown and matured in that time. A week and a half ago, I had an experience that I think a lot of you probably have had as well. I took my son Joshua to college for the first time. My oldest son took him off to college. We went to the airport, we got on a plane, we flew to Minneapolis, we drove to Carleton College. I helped him move into his dorm room and helped him get settled, got him some stuff that I think he wouldn't think of, like a laundry basket. I didn't think of the laundry detergent, but he thought of that later this week. But then I had to say goodbye and leave. That's such a hard thing to do. It was such a difficult transition for me. It was probably easier for him. But part of what I did as a ritual to mark this transition in our lives, I pulled out a letter I had written Josh 18 years ago, 2 days after he was born. A letter that I read in church the next Sunday as my sermon. And I read that letter to him. And I had never shown it to him before. It was in his baby book, but he never looked. But he was touched by that letter, and I was touched by that letter too. But it was kind of interesting as I looked back to those words that I had written just 18 years ago, as I began the adventure of being a parent, how almost naive my understanding of what being a parent really was. And the hopes that I expressed, I still believe in those hopes, but somehow the naivete of 18 years ago has gone by, and I can see the task of parenting, I can see the task of living with a lot more depth. Things are not quite as simple and idealistic as they seemed. Life doesn't always turn out the way you hope and expect. And through the experience of our life, our understanding deepens and matures. When we're young, truth is simple. Life is straightforward, and answers are right or wrong, like they are in Matthew's gospel. But sometimes as we grow older, things are not always as they seem. And life has a lot of ambiguities. And as we search for truth, we find not answers, but mystery. And maybe that is what Mark's story is pointing us to. Let's go back to that moment just before the stories diverged, when they're walking down the path, and when Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And I ask you to imagine the silence that fell upon that crowd. "Who do you say that I am?" And the chattering stopped. Maybe all they could think about was how remarkable a person Jesus was and how intimate a connection with God he seemed to have and how close God seemed to them when they were with him. And it took their breath away. The silence of mystery surrounded them. Frederick Buchner, the novelist and theologian, once wrote these words, "Before the gospel is a word, it is silence. It is life with the sound turned off, so that for a moment or two you can experience it not in terms of the words you make it bearable by, but for the unutterable mystery that it is." Or the words that began Psalm 19 that Helen read a few minutes ago. "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims God's handiwork. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard, yet their voice goes out to the end of the earth." The heavens declare the mystery of God without words. Jesus made present the mystery of God without words. And in that moment of silence, I think the disciples were truly in touch with who Jesus was. Could it be with Peter's confession that the point is not found in the answer that Peter gives, but in the question that Jesus asks, and in the silence that that question opens up, and in the mystery we feel at the heart of that silence? Who do you say that I am?